This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are sitting in for retired jockey Christina McManigal on today's show. Want to extend a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America and all of you tuning in on our website worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, each week a portion of the proceeds from Jock Talk are given back to the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. We encourage you to support the PDJF and those riders who have given our sport so much but are no longer able to compete. You can do that by visiting pdjf.org. A very special show for you here this afternoon, and have been wanting to do this program for a very long time. It's not often that we have the opportunity to visit with a true legend and an icon in the sport of thoroughbred racing, but that is the case for you here on this program today. The 76-year-old Hall of Famer, who is our guest tonight, was born March 26, 1940 in Panama City, Panama. Following in the footsteps of his father and his grandfather, who were also jockeys, he would go on to a career in which he would win 3,140 races in the United States and 873 races in his native Panama for a grand total of 4,013 career victories. He was inducted into Horse Racing's Hall of Fame in 1976 and honored with the Eclipse Award as the nation's outstanding jockey in both 1972 and 1975. And it is a true honor to welcome Braulio Baeza to the program here on Jock Talk this evening. Braulio, thank you for taking the time, my friend. Happy to have you on board.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, looking forward to the visit. And interesting, we're sitting here at Saratoga in the facilities room, which is on the backside barn area. Saratoga is the very same venue that you decided, hey, you know what? It's time to hang up my career all those years ago. Got to be somewhat of a homecoming for you.
Yes, it is. But halfway. I didn't want to retire.
That was back in, what, 1976, I guess, when you finally made the decision, right? Jude trained horses in California for about 20 years, and he was out there with guys like Shoemaker and Pinkai and McCarran. But you told me, Jude, before we started the program, you said you may not have seen a more beautiful rider on a horse than Braulio Baeza.
In my opinion, no. Nobody ever looked better on a horse than you did. My brother and I were huge fans of yours. I remember one Santa Anita meet. You rode the first race the first day for Bobby Frankel on a horse named Old Tavern. I don't know if you remember that or not. It was a claiming race, but you came out in the Frankel silks, the blue with the gold dots. My brother and I, we talked about it from Christmas Eve morning on that you were going to win the first race. We made a big bet, and it set the tone for the whole meet. And you got the horse home in the last couple jumps, and with that flat back that you used to have riding, just want to, even though it was a cheap race, and I've seen thousands and thousands of races, it's one that always sticks in my mind.
Well, thank you. Nice to know.
We talk about how beautiful you looked aboard a horse. What made you such a beautiful rider? What was it that made you that way?
I don't really know, but it had to be because my grandfather and my father, they were jockeys, and they always told me how to look and not to look, you know, like you're tired before the race, or, you know, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, when you were growing up in Panama, you mentioned your father, you mentioned your grandfather, and certainly from a very young age, you were around the sport of racing. Take me back to the early days with Braulio, growing up around the races.
They told me I was almost born in one of the stalls. My mother has it time for me to come out, and we were at the track. We live right down the track, and they had to rush my mother because I was already halfway out.
How old were you when you first started going to the racetrack?
All my life. We lived in the racetrack.
Right from the start.
They lived on the track.
Yeah. Did your dad want you to be a jockey?
My grandfather, he was a jockey. So were my father and my uncles. And that's the only thing I knew. And that's the only thing I was interested in.
I read a story somewhere that said that at age 5, you were hanging out at the barns. You were already getting on some horses for some of the trainers. That it's kind of wanted to rehab maybe a horse that wasn't 100% right. And they knew you were so light at age 5 that you could get on them.
Yeah. I was caught up in horses when I was about 4 and a half. Because in Panama, there's no rule. There was no rule about age or anything like that, you know. So, and I knew how to get on a horse. I used to walk horses for my father and my grandfather. So I was galloping horses when I was 5.
Wow, that's amazing. And four and a half, you got on your first horse when you were 4 and a half.
Yeah.
I remember. When did you start riding races?
When I was 15. Because I had to. They gave me a license, but I couldn't use it because I had to be 15. But I passed all the tests, and everybody knew me, and everything. So yeah. I got a license, but I couldn't ride. That was killing me.
What did your mother think of you riding races?
My mother, she was all for it, yeah. Because we live right on the racetrack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all she ever wanted you to do.
Yeah.
But she made you wait until you graduated high school, though, right?
No, that was the law. That was the law. You can't jog him until you're 15.
I read a story somewhere about you going to the gate with a horse for your dad. It was a filly that just wouldn't break from the gate.
She didn't break with nobody.
Yeah, tell me that story.
It was a filly that she could run, but she just refused to break from the gate. And my father said, put you on a horse. I said, fine. You know, I was crazy enough. And he said, she might break, she might not, because you know her. And she was, I said, I'll be ready. So when the gate opened, she flew right out of there. And my father, I was going to fall off.
How'd she run?
No, that was in the morning.
Oh, in the morning?
In the morning, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was about 12.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard way to learn that lesson, too, isn't it?
Yes. I always remember that.
Take me back to the day when you rode your first professional race. You mentioned you were 15 years old. It was 1955. Take me back to that day. What do you remember about riding in your first race?
I finished last. No, I was very excited, you know. I was dressed from about 9 o'clock in the morning. I was dressed with a jacket and everything. The filly, it was a filly, yeah. She had speed. And she was in front until just about the 16th pole. And then she collapsed. Finished last. And that one, the thing I always remember.
Did you go a long time before they put you on something live, or did they give you a good horse relatively quickly?
The third horse I won. I rode it. Yeah.
How exciting was that for you to finally get to the winner's circle?
Very. I'm still excited.
That's great.
And then you were an apprentice at that point. You struggled a little bit in your very first year, though, didn't you?
I only race on weekends, Saturday and Sundays.
Okay.
In those years, I was going crazy the whole week because I was dying to ride. The first three horses I rode, they ran all right, but they didn't win. So the fourth race I won, and that was it.
From there on,
I won almost every week.
What was the key?
In Panama, the only race started on Sunday.
And that's it, just on the weekends. What was the key to getting your career started? What was the whole key to finally starting to win some races?
Good horses. You ride a good horse, you win. You ride a bad horse, you're back there.
Did you always have to ride your father's horses, or did other people start using you pretty quick?
Everybody. They knew me. I was born almost in the racetrack. And I knew everybody. Everybody knew me, and everybody wanted me to ride the horses.
You know, Braulio, but there have been so many great riders to come out of Panama. How come?
I don't know, but in my belief, because it's only one racetrack. And if you don't look good and you don't win, they don't put you on horses. So yeah, they force you to improve and look good and be better.
How much otherwise, different is riding races today than it was back then?
It's a lot easier now because they got races every day and 10 races in every racetrack. And Panama was only one racetrack, you only race Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, how many races do you think you would have won today if you were at the peak of your career? You'd probably be the leading rider every year.
Maybe three. Who knows? Who knows?
So what led to you coming to the United States?
I always wanted to come to the United States because in Panama, you got to go to the movies. And the movies, they show races of the United States, the stakes. So every Sunday, I was in a movie from before they opened. And I watched the same movie 10 times to watch it replay the races. Yeah, it was fun. It was very interesting to me.
What eventually brought you here? What was the reason for you coming to the United States?
I wanted to go to Hialeah.
Really?
Panama, you knew about Hialeah. In fact, when I first came to the United States, and the weekend was to Hialeah. They were racing Hialeah, and I fell in love with it. And they said, I got to come back here. A week later, I was right back here. And I stayed here.
All right, you have to tell me if this story is true, that there was an owner in Panama that you had won a couple of stakes for, and the horse's name was Monzon. And he said, you know what?
Monzon.
Monzon. Okay.
He was in Panama.
Monzon. If you win the next one for me, I'm going to give you a trip to the United States. Yeah, is that how it all happened?
Yep, that's how it did. It was a good horse. I was riding him, and then we run a stake, and then we won two stakes. And he said, I'm going to make you a promise. And if we win this stake for Christmas stake, I'll take you to Panama, to Florida. And we spent a week in Florida. That's all he had to say. We won by 10. And then we were in Miami, yeah, and Hialeah. And I fell in love with Hialeah. It's a big race in Hialeah than Panama, you know.
And a beautiful place, too.
Oh, great, yeah. It's still beautiful.
Yeah, it's still beautiful.
Now they got quarter horses.
You work there now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Clerk of Scales.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hialeah was back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the capital of racing in Florida, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. I know.
All the good horses raced there.
Winter was the best place to be.
You met a gentleman by the name of Fred Hooper when you came to Florida, too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, the friends I came, they knew an agent, Camilo. And they introduced me to him, and he said, I would like to see him get on a horse. And then he knew Hooper. And then he told Hooper about me. And Hooper said, how the hell I know he's a jockey or he's a, well, you know. He said, why don't you let him get a horse for you tomorrow morning? He said, I have my boots and everything. So I came on a breeze horse for Hooper. And they told me to breeze the horse in 49. So I breeze the horse. When I came back, he said, you know how fast you went? I said, 49. He said, how you know? I said, well, I just figured out the way the horse was running. And he fell in love with it, and he wanted to come and ride for him.
So you were the first rider that he brought here, because after you, several riders started coming
in. He brought Fitting Kai and Jacinto Vasquez and a couple of the riders, Jorge Velasquez.
Think about those names. How good were those jockeys? I mean, back in your day, the riding colony that you were competing against was unbelievably good.
Were in the United States?
Yeah, in the United States. Well, you mentioned those kind of names like Pinkai and those riders.
They came after me.
Yeah.
Well, in Panama, it was only one racetrack, then race Saturday and Sundays. And if you don't do good, you better get out because they're not going to put you on horses. They force you to improve and get better.
He got better, didn't he? He definitely got better, did Braulio Baeza, our special guest here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tell me about that first race you won at Keeneland back in 1960. That was a pretty good win for you, too. your first ride at Keeneland, right?
Yeah, the first day of the meeting, the first race, and my first race in the United States. And we're lucky enough we won it. And that was the beginning. So I won two races that day. I rode three, I won two.
Was that for Mr. Hooper?
One for Hooper.
One for Hooper.
And one for Mr. Young, Harold Young. Mm-hmm. And everybody liked him. I rode three horses, won two races. So that was my lucky day.
Of course, he would go on, Wood Braulio, to be the top money-winning rider in North America, 1965 through 1969. Every single year in that stretch, he was the top money-winning rider. All right, be honest with me, Braulio. A kid growing up in Panama to come here to the United States, have the kind of success that you did on a consistent basis like that, do you just kind of pinch yourself sometimes and say, did this really happen to me?
Maybe. Yeah, because I was lucky. You know, I got Camilo, or who knows, who was the agent, and he knew everybody. So, and I won the first race I ever rode, the first day of the meeting. That was a big help for me.
Camilo was such a great agent, Camilo Marin. Yeah. And he was such a classy guy, always dressed, always soft spoken.
Oh, you know him, right?
Oh, very well. Yeah, I know his son very well too. And I used to love listening to Camilo tell stories at the draw at Santa Anita about you and some of his other riders, because it seemed like he had an endless supply of the Panamanian jockeys because of his relationship with Mr. Hooper. He was a wonderful guy.
You know, Bradley, you had a couple of nicknames that were given to you throughout your riding career here in the United States. One of them was the Great Stone Face, because you always were so impassive looking. Nothing ever seemed to bother you. Was that your style?
Not really. Oh, well, you're concentrating what I have to do. And every race, and I check all the horses, you know, I'm telling you. My whole mind was in the race, what I had to do, and the horses, how I wanted to be in position I want to be in, all that.
You know, the other nickname that I found was the Sphinx. You remember that one?
Yeah.
They would call him the Sphinx because his expression was so difficult to read, and you very rarely showed any emotion.
Yeah, so they said.
I'm sure you got emotional in some races, though. I'm sure there were some times where
Oh, yeah, but I kept it for myself.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Braulio Baeza here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. When you think back on your career, Braulio, what are some of the moments that really stand out to you? Some of the big races, some of the big horses?
The first one is when I won the Belmont, first time, my first Belmont. And everybody knew that. I said, how are you? And he spoke to me in Spanish in the winner's circle. And I look at him and he said, he spoke Spanish? I said to him, I said, yeah, I speak Spanish. He said, I did my service in Panama. I said,
wow. What was that like, meeting President Eisenhower? What was that like?
That was something that, to me, it was great. One of the greatest things ever happened to me, because I met the President of the United States, and in fact, he put his arm around me, he spoke to me in Spanish, and all that, you know. It's something that don't happen every day. You know?
Yeah.
And no, it doesn't.
Did you meet any other presidents while you were riding?
Kennedy.
How about other famous people that you had the chance to meet in your career?
Well, you name it. I met so many people, so many famous people, you know, and movie stars and all that, you know. And those years, all the movie stars, they wanted to be with the jockeys for some reason.
A lot of them at Atlantic City, huh?
Yeah.
A lot of movie stars used to go to Atlantic City all the time.
You know, that first Belmont win came in 1961 with Sherluck, and then 2 years later, you're back again winning the Belmont, but that was after you won your Kentucky Derby that year in 1963 with Shadowgay. Take me back to that day. What do you remember about that day?
Well, the whole world knew about the Kentucky Derby. And just being in it is something really, really out of this world. In those years, now it's a different story. And me, a little kid from Panama, a punk from Panama, you know, and being in the United States and riding in the Kentucky Derby, something almost impossible. And then when I meet Eisenhower and all of it, I was in the moon.
What do you remember about the race in Shadowgay?
Around the half a mile, I knew I was going to win it.
Really?
Yep.
How come?
Because I had so much horse. And I see the horses in front of me, and they were driving, and they were the favorites. I said, I got him beat. So, but he said, cocky in a way, but I knew we were going to win it.
Yeah.
I got most horse than them.
What's that feeling like when you realize that you have so much horse and you know you're not going to get beat?
You smiling. Smiling inside you, you're smiling.
Smiling on the inside, stone face on the outside.
Because you know that you got him beat.
Like I say, you came back, you won the Belmont Stakes with Shadow Gay too, and that had to be a special moment for you too.
Yeah, because the only bad thing is he didn't win the Preakness.
Yeah.
When you're second in the Preakness, I would have won the Triple Crown.
Yeah. What happened in the Preakness?
Nothing. I just got beat.
Mm-hmm.
Into the first turn, I got carried very wide. And Shoemaker, Hartog was in the winner. He got through on the rails, and that was the difference, yeah.
How good were Shoemaker and Hartog?
If you're on the horses and they got the same quality of horse, you're in trouble. They were hard to beat. Yeah. They don't make a mistake. Very difficult for them to make a mistake.
You didn't make very many either.
I try not to.
6 years later, you're back in the Belmont Winner's Circle again, 1969. That was with Arts and Letters. By the way, defeated Majestic Prince, who was going for the Triple Crown that year.
That's right.
Did you feel bad about beating him?
Not a bit.
Anybody boo you when you were coming back to the Winner's Circle?
Oh, yes. The people from the horse.
From Majestic Prince. Yeah, they didn't like you too much.
No. Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that race?
They told me to go back to Panama.
Johnny Longden trained Majestic Prince.
Yeah.
And you rode against him a few times. What kind of a rider was he?
He was a good rider. Very, very smart. You know, he didn't make too many mistakes. I mean, he didn't make the wrong moves. And make you happier when you beat him because he don't make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more satisfying.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That you could beat a guy like that who doesn't make any mistakes. And, you know, like you said, Jude said, you didn't make many mistakes either, though. You tried to get yourself in the right position all the time, too. That's an art, isn't it? That's an art form, isn't it, being able to do that?
Well, you might put it that way, but you got to know the horses and check the horses and all that. I just concentrated on the race. My mind was just on the race, nothing else.
Johnny Velasquez always tells us that he has plan A, plan B, plan C. And it always seemed to me like when you were warming up, you were going through the checklist in your mind. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, every time I rode a horse, I was concentrated in the race. I couldn't hear no people or nothing calling me or nothing. My mind was just in the horses and I had to run and keep running in my mind how I wanted to be, where I wanted to be, what horse I got to follow, something like that. You know?
It's like a golfer visualizing their shot. You were visualizing the race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there a positive in that? Does it go from your mind to your actual movements when you're on the horse?
Yeah. You when I'm on a horse, I'm with the horse. I don't know if I can explain this. But nothing else around me. I don't pay attention and nothing, just and my horse and the horses I gotta beat. And how I wish the race is run. And what position that my competition going to be, the one that got to beat and all that, you know.
we're talking with Braulio Baeza here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. You might hear a little commotion in the background. We are, of course, recording in the facilities building here at Saratoga. So we'll apologize for those little hiccups there in the background, but really enjoying the visit here. We're going to get to a short commercial break. When we do come back, the second half of the program, we're going to talk more with Braulio, and we're going to talk about some of the 24 champions that he rode in his entire career. It's pretty remarkable. We'll talk about them next here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna and Jude Feld sitting in for your usual host on the program. That is retired jockey Christina McManigal. She'll be back with you next week, but we are really enjoying this visit with Hall of Fame jockey Braulio Baeza, and talked in the first half of the program about his upbringing and being raised in Panama and getting started with this Hall of Fame career. And we talked about the Belmonts. We talked about the Kentucky Derby. Well, we're going to focus on more champions in the second half of the program, because you heard me mention before the break that Braulio rode a total of 24 champions during his career, including 9 Hall of Famers. Pretty remarkable. We will remind you, too, before we get to that, that you can go to horseracingradio.net, check out the podcast of this show. All of our shows, they're up there on our website for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. All right, Braulio, 24 champions, 9 Hall of Famers.
Really?
Honest to God. It's remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I didn't know about it.
Let me throw some names at you. You tell me what you remember. We'll start with Buck Passer. What do you remember about Buck Passer?
Pony. you were one of the. It was a great horse, and very competitive. He didn't want his horses come alongside of him. He just wanted to put his head in front of him.
He would dig in.
Yeah.
Did you have to ride him a little bit to get him to go, or was he kind of push button?
No. He was the type of horse he don't want to see the horse in front of him, because when the horses come by him, he keep on running. The problem with him is after he open up a half a length, then he relax. Then the same horse come back and go by him, and then you go after him again. He was a very, what you call him, a competitive. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to be with the horse, go head and head with him.
JT, you remember Buck Passer?
I do. He was a tremendous, tremendous horse.
All right, how about Dr. Fager? Tell me about him.
It was all the opposite.
Really?
He just wanted to be in the lead. They don't want to see the horse next to him. He just wanted to keep going.
Was he the fastest horse you ever rode?
Probably. Yeah. Him and Grouse Stark. Grouse Stark, he broke down early. The last time he ran in 3 legs, and he still finished 2nd. He only got beat in the neck half of him.
What's more fun for a jockey? You get a horse like Dr. Fager who just goes to the lead from the start, or you get a horse that comes from behind and you make that big late run? What's more fun?
Both. long as you're the best horse, that's it, you know, the horse win. But it's in more interesting the horses come from behind, because you kind of play with all the other horses when they come by you. But Dr. Frege, he just want to go. He just don't want to see nobody next to him. Which is a pleasure in both ways.
As long as you're winning.
Yep.
How about Susan's girl?
Susan's girl, she was a good filly. Real, real good filly. But I didn't ride it all the time because I was not on the contract with Hooper at that time yet. Mm-hmm. She was good, but not like a Buck Passer or Dr. Figure.
You were aboard a horse by the name of Ack as well. Mm-hmm. Another Hall of Famer. What do you remember there?
I kind of forgot about that guy.
You ride all these Hall of Famers, yeah. It's easy to do.
He was owned by Greer Garson. Yeah. Charlie Whittingham trained him. He was a fast horse, too. He wasn't nearly as fast as Dr. Fager, but he was, you know, he was a good horse. But I wouldn't put him in the same class.
I know one horse that
horses were faster than Dr. Fager. Yeah.
I know one horse you probably haven't forgotten about. Foolish Pleasure.
Yeah, Match Race.
Foolish, they had a match race with Ruffian. Unfortunately, things didn't.
Yeah, that was unfortunately, yeah, very important. Because we were running was head ahead. And I opened up at about half a link, and then I looked back and I said, because I want to make sure Jacinto didn't go down. That was sad. Yeah.
Does that type of thing haunt a rider for a while? I mean, you know, you're talking about it right now, and I can see the expression on your face. Yeah. You know, it's got to be difficult.
It was very sad. She was a good filly. She had a real good filly. And seeing it happen, and then she died from it. So that was terrible.
Yeah, sad day. You were also aboard Damascus. I remember Damascus, too. He was pretty darn good, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite horse that you rode?
Grouse Stark.
How come?
I don't know. There's something about that horse. Every time I got on him, I felt nobody can beat me, you know? Because that's the way he make you feel like, you know? Which they didn't.
What about your relationships with owners, farms, stables? You rode a lot for Darby Dan. You rode a lot for Phipps. Talk about that a little bit.
We had great great relationship with it, because of course you win every time you win, everybody loves you. You get beat in a fail and everybody start booing you and all that, you know. But something that make you feel great inside, you know. I don't know, maybe I'm cocky because I said they can beat me.
But you know what? I think all great riders are. They have to be, right? You have to have that confidence, don't you?
I guess. I don't know. I only know about me. I don't know about everybody else.
Braulio Baeza, our special guest on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, a portion of the proceeds from this show given back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. You can support the PDJF by visiting pdjf.org.
When you were growing up, your father and your grandfather were jockeys. Was there another jockey that you looked up to when you were a kid?
Yeah, was a jockey in Panama named Blas Aguirre. He was the leading rider for 200 years. Him and Paco Bravo, because the style of ride. Paco Bravo was a different style of ride. He was one of those jockeys stay back and then come back at the end. And Aguirre was in front most of the time. So those are two I kind of, I look at them all the time and watch him ride. And I was a little kid and I said, one day I want to be like them. You know?
Did you ever get to race against them?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, oh yeah. I become very friendly with them. For that reason.
Did you beat them?
Yep. I was lucky enough to beat them a lot.
That's special.
Yeah. And we become very good friends. Brau was from Chile, and Aguirre was from Panama, Panamanian. So they used to meet him in the races, and I loved to watch him ride. And enjoy that. And I learn from them too.
Yeah. If you could pick one thing that you would say is the most important thing for a rider to possess, patience, hands, whatever it might be, what is it? What's the one thing that's the key?
Well, you got to have patience. If you have patience, you'll make the wrong moves and, you know, you move too soon or make mistakes. So you got to be patient.
We've heard that from so many jockeys, haven't we?
Yeah, and trainers too.
Trainers too. Yeah, a lot of trainers too. When you first came to the States, did you speak English at that point?
Not one word.
Really? How tough
was that? Camilo, right?
Yeah.
Camilo is, that's why I got Camilo, because he spoke English, he was Cuban. Yeah.
He wouldn't have been a very good translator.
No. And I tell Camilo what happened in the race, and I have permission from the stewards to let Camilo come in the paddock, give him instruction in Spanish and all that.
Was that difficult for you to get started here in the United States, not speaking any English?
No, because when you're riding, you don't speak. You don't talk when you're riding. Just before and after. So Camilo gave me they gave Camilo the instruction. They gave it to me in Spanish. And by the way, after the race, I tell them everything about the race until I start learning English. I mess it up a lot.
John Velasquez told us on this show that he learned English by watching cartoons, like The Little Mermaid on TV. How did you learn English?
Asking. I used to talk a lot, especially with Camilo and all the couple of trainers that spoke Spanish. I talked to them the whole day and night. Bugged the hell out of them. But they helped me a lot. And they helped me with the English and everything.
Look back on that day in 1976 when you're inducted into the Hall of Fame here in Saratoga. What was that day like? What do you remember?
Well, I knew about a year before I was going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, so I was just waiting for Saratoga.
So when you were up there making your speech, what was that like?
Lousy. I spoke lousy English. So I just... spoken halfway in Spanish.
Braulio Baeza here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So many memorable moments, such a part of the stories and the lore and the legend of thoroughbred racing, and really enjoying this visit for you here this evening. We're talking about that Hall of Fame in 1976, that induction. Look, you're talking about a guy here in Braulio that has ridden multiple champions, multiple Hall of Famers. He's in the Hall of Fame himself, as we just told you. Probably when you think back on your career, could you ever imagine that it would end up where it has?
No, never, ever. Never even came to my mind. I was just lucky enough to be a jockey. You know, I felt very, very, very fortunate. I got to ride all the horses I rode. And, because when I came here, I didn't speak one word in English. I was lost.
When you're here in Saratoga, will you ever go over to the museum and maybe look at your plaque?
Every year I go. I haven't gone yet this year.
What's it like standing there looking at your name and your plaque in the Hall of Fame?
Make me proud, you know, that I made it. And a little kid from Panama, he made it to the Hall of Fame in the United States. And that don't happen too often.
Yeah, very, very humbling. But it was interesting to me to see your face when Mike said 24 champions and your reaction to that. You know, it's like you lived it, but you weren't ticking them off. You weren't worried about it because you had the next race to ride all the time. And I think that's a rare quality, especially in today's racing, where people are very much into the trophies and the fanciness of the sport, and you're more into the actual game of it.
Yeah. The races. I enjoy the races. I enjoy competing. And to me it was, I don't know if you call them like a game, but to me it was very compete with the other jockeys and the other horses. And, you know, I plan the race. Every race, I can plan it how I want to be and how the horses wanted to be in front of me and what I position. And that's what my point of interest and everything. I just concentrate on the races. And when I was in the jockey, I wasn't BSing with other jockeys. I was just checking the horses, and that's all I did.
You know, you were always so well respected by your fellow jockeys. And in 1968, they gave you the George Wolfe Memorial Award, yeah, which is voted on by the jockeys. What did that mean when you received that award? How special was that?
That's something that don't happen. Well, it just only happened once in your lifetime, and it's make you feel great because it comes from the jockeys, not the owners or trainers. You know, they respect you.
Yeah, it's a tremendous award, and it means a lot coming from your peers, and that they appreciate you and the way you conduct yourself and how you are in the jocks room. It's such a unique sport in that the competitors are all in the same jocks room. It's not like a football game where one team goes to one side and one goes to the other. You guys are together all day.
Yep.
I think that's the ultimate award. I mean, the Hall of Fame is the Hall of Fame, right? Yeah. And then you have, you know, the Eclipse Awards, which are the Eclipse Awards. But then to have something like this bestowed upon you by your fellow jockeys, it's just remarkable. Yeah, and it means an awful lot. We've become friends with your son, Braulio Jr., who is the steward here at the New York Racing Association. Was there ever any chance that he was going to be a jockey?
No, he was too big. From the beginning, he was too big.
Would you have wanted him to be a jockey?
Yes, I do. I did, yeah. But that didn't last long.
Did he ever get a chance to try it or no?
Oh, yeah, he got a horse. He's good on a horse. He's good on a horse, very good on a horse. Now he's way more on the horse now.
He rides a lot of motorcycles.
What do you think your dad, your grandfather, you know, if they were here today and they were looking back on your resume and all the races you won and your plaque in the Hall of Fame, what do you think they would say?
I don't know. I didn't spend much time with my grandfather. He died when I was young. But and we didn't have no films or nothing of them riding. No. There were no movies or anything like that. I didn't even see my father. Right? I only know my uncle. He wasn't that good. he was five in front. I remember when he was five lengths in front at the 8 pole. And the one dog, and he went down like, oh, jeez, this is my uncle. That was embarrassing.
Spoken like a true Hall of Famer there, huh? Yeah, you had so many great memories, JT, that you know you shared that one at the beginning of the show about Braulio, but you've told me repeatedly, when I said, hey, we're going to try and sit down with Braulio, you said, we need to do this because he was so beautiful on a horse.
Yeah, just fantastic. Did you write an autobiography when he won the San Anita Handicap? Or maybe it was another race.
No, I think another race.
You wrote autobiography one day. It was a spectacular ride. And you didn't always come to California in the winter. Sometimes you did, sometimes you didn't. But when you did, it was such a treat, you know, to have you there and to watch you ride.
I was on the concert with Hooper. I had to go with
Mm-hmm. Where Hooper goes, you go.
Yeah. until I finally bought my contract, because he wanted to go to, I want to go to New York, and he wanted to go to
Arlington or
no, or, and
oh, to
New Jersey,
New, oh.
Atlantic City.
Uh-huh.
And I said, no, I want to go to New York. He said, no, you can't. You got to go. I thought he stopped me from riding because I didn't go to New York to Atlantic City. I wanted to ride in New York. That's why I really had to buy my contract.
Well, you had a chance to ride all over the world, though, mm-hmm. right? You rode Roberto in England.
Yeah.
Right?
And in France.
And in France, too. How special was that? That had to be pretty cool.
I won in England. I finished second in France. And I finished about sixth in the Arcotrium. So that wasn't that good.
Did you ride any other countries?
Yeah. Yeah. I rode in France, England, Brazil, Venezuela.
Canada,
I just like riding here.
It doesn't really count as another country. It's Canada.
Yeah. You didn't need a passport to go.
And not in those days.
Yeah, not in those days you didn't. That's right. So what is Braulio Baeza up to these days? Let people know what you're doing now.
Nothing. No, I'm retired from everything. I'm 99 years old now.
We'll spend a little time at Hialeah still, though. We talked about that, right?
Yeah.
You spend a little time working down there.
Greg Esquilo won the race.
Right.
Yeah.
Would you have been a good quarter horse jockey?
No. Too short. I don't like those short races.
What do you want people to know about Braulio Baeza? Like, if you could sum up your career in a couple of words, what would you want them to know about you when you were riding? Nothing.
I don't know. I never thought of thing. They know about me, so what did they know?
Perfect. Well said.
Yep.
He's Braulio Baeza. He's a Hall of Famer, and he has been kind enough to join us on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here for you here this evening. And Braulio, we can't thank you enough for spending the time with us. Really do appreciate the visit, and want to wish you all the best, my friend, going forward.
Well, it's my pleasure. I enjoy it.
Thanks to Braulio for taking the time for that visit. We'll be back to wrap it up right after this.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Dr. Fager Racing Room, coming out of along the rail. Here they come, spinning out of the turn. Dr. Fager, a short lead. Racing Room in second, Info in third. Then out the window. Dr. Fager trying out by four lengths. Racing Room, Info, and High Tribute. 100 yards to come, and Dr. Fager is all by himself. 8, 9, Dr. Fager by about 10 lengths. Racing Room is second, Info third, the Washington Park Handicap from Arlington Park.
And welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's
Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A look back at the 1968 Washington Park Handicap and the great Phil Georgeff with the call. Here they come spinning out of the turn, and it was Dr. Fager, a world record performance that afternoon. The mile completed in 1:32 1/5. And if you listen to the Jock Talk program here with Braulio Baezes, we hope you have, you had a chance to find out that Dr. Fager was probably the fastest horse that Braulio ever rode. And Jude, when you look at a performance like that, it's easy to see why.
Well, he was probably the fastest horse that anybody rode ever.
Yeah.
He was a tremendously fast horse. And when you listen to that race, you hear names like Racing Room and High Tribute. These were horses that were brilliantly fast in their own right. Racing Room was one of the fastest horses in California for many years. And you know, Dr. Fager just outran him, looked him in the eye, won by 10. And fantastic racehorse, really, owned by John Nayrud, and he's a icon, obviously, Hall of Famer, and just an amazing animal.
One of 24 champions ridden by Braulio Baeza, and when we brought that up to him in the interview just a short time ago, Braulio acted surprised. He didn't realize that he had ridden that many champions. He knew he was on a lot of good horses, but 24, he had no idea.
Well, that's the kind of guy he is. You know, the look on his face was like, I did? I think that's what he said, actually.
Yeah.
I did. When you're doing it, you're not necessarily counting them. You hear that sometimes in the Hall of Fame inductions. You know, they bring up the guy's stats, or even when we're doing a trainer talk show, people will say, I had no idea that I won that many races or earned that much money. I always tease Mark Hennig about being the $67 million man. Now I think he's up to 69. He always reminds me now, and I'm usually off by a million or so. So it's crazy.
I always enjoy when we have the chance to visit with legends in this sport, guys like Chris McCarron. We had a chance to sit down with Mike Smith on the very first Jock Talk, and Mike is still obviously an active jockey, but I consider him to be a legend in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And now a guy like Braulio Baeza, and you start hearing his stories, and you hear him go back to the beginning and talk about growing up in Panama. And as a young kid, he even said it. He could never imagine that his career was going to end up where it did. He was just trying to just ride horses. That's all he wanted to do.
Yeah, well, that's his family's legacy, you know, a great racing family. And when you're in a country like Panama, a small country, you're not really thinking super, super big. You're thinking you're probably never going to leave there. And that's one of the beauties of the United States, is it's a land of dreamers. And people think they can do anything here, but it's different in other nations. And so, you know, his story is a great one, because it's somebody that was born, you know, on the racetrack and never expected to be where he is today. And he was just an amazing rider, such talent, really fantastic.
As you told him, you and your brother Bob grew up somewhat idolizing Braulio Baeza. He was a jockey that you looked up to, really enjoyed watching his style, his beauty, his grace aboard a horse. What was the thing that you took away from that visit that you're always going to remember when you think back on what we just did in that conversation with Braulio?
Well, you know, I think just his humbleness. You know, the world's a lot different now than it used to be, but he's a very humble guy. Now you see, you know, guys making a 6-inch touchdown and they're beating their chest like they really did something spectacular. And here's a guy that, you know, was at the top of our sport for a long, long time. And he never changed. He was always calm. We talked about his riding style with him and how he used to have that flat back and how he would get horses to relax. And he never seemed like he was in a rush. He just did everything so effortlessly. And you know, you can't really compare like a ballet dancer and a jockey. They're two entirely different things, but even Victor Espinosa is not that great of a dancer.
Well, and stone face, right? I mean, that was one of the words that was used to describe him. I asked him about it, and all he would say was that he was just concentrating on the race. And that's another thing that made Braulio Baeza such a special rider, is that the minute he was given a leg up aboard the horse, his focus, as it is with a lot of great riders, was impeccable.
Yeah, and I think just a genuine feel for the horse, being able to feel that horse out in the post parade if he'd never been on him before, and figure out what it is about this horse, how he can help this horse, excel, and I think that was one of his strengths.
I loved when you asked him about how many races he would have won today if he was racing in the modern era, which is completely different than when Braulio was riding. If he was getting the kind of mounts that he could have gotten in this day and age, how many races would he have won? I love that question, and he said, I don't know. He was honest with you. He said, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it would have been a large amount, and he would have made a ton of money.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, just poetry in motion and a class act all the way. And you can tell by the clientele that he had, that, you know, that he rode for the Phipps and Sigmund Sommer and John Nehru. These were big names back in those days, and they were the top of the sport, and he rode all the best horses for the best owners.
It's always extremely difficult in any sport to compare athletes, to compare teams from different eras, because the game was completely different back then and the way the game was played was different. Same thing with jockeys. But if you were to look at a modern day jockey, somebody that's riding now, that you would say, okay, maybe this person or these couple of people may be somewhat comparable to a guy like Braulio.
Well, I would pick Johnny Velasquez because of the way that he is, how he's so contemplative of the horses that he rides, that he has a plan in his head, that he knows where he is on the racetrack at all times. I think they would probably be the closest. And then the way that he conducts himself off the track, you know, he's a quiet man. He's not a guy that, you know, blows his own horn. He's very humble. So I think that would be, you know, my best comparison to a modern day rider.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Johnny seems to fit, and I didn't watch Braulio nearly as closely as you did when you were growing up, obviously. By the time he was really hitting his stride, I was very, very, very young.
Still in diapers.
As a matter of fact, that effort with Dr. Fager, that was 3 years before Baron, 3 years BB.
Wow.
I didn't come along until 71.
Isn't that sad? You missed the golden age of racing.
You know what? In a lot of respects, I'm very sad about that, because you're right. You think of guys like Braulio, and you think of, you know, Shoemaker and Lafitte and Delahousse. I mean, all of those jockeys, even though Lafitte and Delahousse and even Shoe were still, you know, I was so young. I don't really remember much of those races, much of those jockeys.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, you said it's hard to compare eras, but, you know, the riding colony back in those days, like from the late 60s to the mid 80s, even early 90s, it was so strong, and it was strong in California, and it was strong in New York. I always hearken back to the day that I put Alex Solis on a horse of Mr. House's when Gary Stevens wasn't available, and Mr. House kind of, you know, he went off on me a little bit, you know, and Alex Solis is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you when you're putting a future Hall of Famer on a horse, and you get guff for it, you know, yep, because you can't get Stevens or Delahousse, then you realize how strong the colony was, you know. And we had guys like Shoemaker and Cordero and, you know, Richard Migliori and Chris McCarron and these guys all over the place. They were everywhere. And of course, Mike Smith and Gary Stevens, who are still riding today, were in that group, but they were the young dudes coming up. They were like the future stars. And you know, so when you're as old as I am, you live through these eras, and now you've got, you know, Johnny Velasquez and Javier Castellano. They're like the elder statesmen, because here we've got the Ortiz brothers coming up behind them and dominating. So, you know, it's a whole different game now. And it's not to say that the riders now aren't great, because there's a lot of great riders, but in those days, I mean, it was so deep. It was unbelievable.
He's Jude Feld. I'm Mike Penna. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Christina McManigal will be back in the saddle with you on this program next week. I want to remind you that you can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, if you missed any portion of this particular show with Braulio Baeza or any of our Jock Talk programs. Head over to horseracingradio.net and check them all out today. You can listen at your leisure on our website or Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. One other thing, Jude, before we wrap up this program, that stood out. I loved the story that I had read that I brought up to Braulio kind of toward the beginning of that interview tonight, when we talked about what brought him to the United States and having to win that race in Panama. And if he were to win that race, then the owner of the horse was going to send him to the United States. What if Braulio had lost that race?
Well,
and didn't get the ticket?
Yeah.
Does that change the course of history?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's like Mr. Baseball. I mean, everything, you know, you just don't know what happens in your life. But eventually he probably would have made his way here. He was super talented and he would have been maybe the leading rider, you know, in Panama, and somebody would have found out about it and brought him here. Jock agents, you know, they're everywhere. They're like tentacles of a octopus. And when they find a good rider, they grab them wherever in the world they may be. So I think he would have made it here eventually, but that was a very opportune victory and probably a lot of pressure on him.
And Braulio's son, who you heard him talk about toward the end of the interview, Braulio Baeza Jr., making his mark now. Braulio said, hey, he could ride. He was good on a horse, but maybe got a little bit too big to keep riding, unlike his dad. Well, too much tequila, maybe. But so now he's doing a great things with the New York Racing Association as a steward there, and working with a lot of the jocks, which I think his experience, having grown up as the son of a Hall of Fame jockey, is invaluable when he's working with young riders coming up today.
Yeah, no question about it. And Braulio loves the sport, and he's a very thoughtful guy, and he doesn't take any guff, but he really has everybody's best interest at heart. So hats off to him.
Well, Braulio Baeza Jr., our special guest on this Hall of Fame edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's this evening. We want to thank everybody for tuning in, and don't forget that you can listen each and every week Tuesday night, Sirius 219, XM 206, and worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Braulio Baeza, special visit here for you tonight. 24 champions ridden in that Hall of Fame career, and maybe none faster and none more special than the great Dr. Fager, who you heard just a short time ago winning the Washington Park Handicap in 1968. That's going to do it for us here tonight. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's.